your host for Lacrosse Talk PM, Rick Sola.
All right, welcome to a Thursday of Lacrosse Talk PM. If you want to get in here, the guy just said the number, but I'll say it again, 608-785-7914. I should turn that on so I can get those text messages. Coming up on the show, double interviews. Audra Martin, she's the health director of the La Crosse County Health Department. And she is going to come on and kind of talk about, we're a week and a half out from the end of Oktoberfest, about a week and a half. And in relation to COVID, what are we seeing with COVID and Oktoberfest a week and a half away? Is it even time to start seeing that stuff? We can talk about other COVID-related issues. And yeah, just kind of bounce around with stuff like that. And after that, I'm going to talk to Tom Kamenick. He's the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. And if you heard yesterday's show, for a little bit, we talked about, because it came right after or right before the show, just the La Crosse Police Department being sued by, who has been on the show before, Peter Cameron, who is the editor, the director, the chief of the Badger Project news site out of Madison. So they're suing the La Crosse Police Department over some open records, and Tom is essentially the attorney there. And he's kind of an open records expert, so we can get into that a little bit. And I didn't ask Tom, but he, you know, if you got questions for him, if you got open records questions for him, just shoot me a text, 608-785-7914. If you want to get in right now, you can do that as well. But I want to get to Brad in the news as soon as possible, just so I can have more time with both of these people to talk about things that I think are pretty important. Other than that, there's some state news. Ron Kind, he's endorsing Brad Paff. I don't think that's probably not a huge surprise. I think didn't they work together? So that's not a huge surprise that he would do that, as we have Rebecca Cook announcing her candidacy into the 3rd District of the U.S. House of Representatives here in La Crosse. So we're up to 3 people running as Democrats, with Brett Knudsen, Brad Paff, and Rebecca Cook. Who do you like there? Anyone? Just, you know, or Republican Derek Van Orden? I don't know. I haven't looked lately, but you know, so usually you get some kind of random email. Like Rebecca sent an email at 6 in the morning yesterday, said she's announcing her campaign, and it was like, oh, okay. Knew another person. So I haven't got any other Republicans. Do Republicans, one didn't make or spend enough money to keep running in the campaign as a Republican, which I thought was like $5,000 was the amount. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in campaign finances and eligibility, but I think it is stupid that if you can't raise or spend enough money to remain in a congressional race, I don't know, that doesn't seem healthy. $5,000 seems like a lot of money. I mean, if I had to spend $5,000 on a campaign, that would be a lot. If I can get people to, if you got to get the signatures or whatever, I don't know, but it just seems a little odd. But is anyone even going to try to challenge Derek Van Orden, who announced a couple of weeks ago he had raised over, I think he'd hit $1 million in the third quarter for raising funds? Really kind of have a problem with how much everybody is spending or acquiring, I should say, in campaign donations. Ron Kind not being off that list. I think he's probably had the most out of everybody here. But yeah, it's just kind of disheartening. My theory is that, you know, first of all, Citizens United, we've got to get rid of that somehow. But the states could do their own thing, I think, perhaps. But everybody gets to donate to their politician a maximum of $15. And that's it. You only get, I can send Brad Paff $15. I can send Derek Van Orden $15. I can send Jill Billings $15. But that's it. And that way, everyone's even. I mean, if it's $100, that's a lot of money for certain people. If it's $1,000, that's way too much money. We're already getting into too much money. $1,000. And regular people can't even think about contributing to a campaign once it gets over, I would say, $15. That way, everyone's on the same level, because I think everyone could probably afford $15 if they really liked a candidate. Anyway, that's my rant. I'm going to get Brad doing the news here. I'm going to talk to Audra Martine, and then we're going to talk about this La Crosse Police Department being sued after that. We'll be back. All right, welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM. 608-785-7914 is the text line. If you want to get in here, I have Audra. You know, Audra, you probably weren't listening, but I said your name wrong. But it's Audra Martini, right?
Yeah.
Martini.
Yeah.
It's spelled Martine, but it's pronounced Martini. I wrote it Martini so I would read what I wrote. But in my head, I'm like, no, it's the opposite of what I'm reading. And then, so yeah, I messed myself up. But yes, Audra Martini is the health director at the La Crosse County Health Department. She started that job in May. But you've been in human services for 18 years, huh?
In La Crosse, yes.
And what's it been like? You get to take over the health department in the middle of a pandemic. That sounds like fun, right?
Well, it's an important role, I think, to take in leading something where there's so many mixed emotions and mixed information that's out there. And being a community member here for a long time, it's a good position to be in, because I think it's important to listen to everyone's concerns and what they think is going well and what isn't, and to do what we can as a county, not just as the health department, but as a larger county, working on, you know, whatever we can do to help us get through this.
What's been the hardest part of managing that? You know, you talk about, you know, there's certain information out there that isn't always relevant or you know, helpful. And you guys are trying to get the right information out, but you probably have a lot of phone calls or emails that explain things to you differently. Because I believe we have a lot of experts out there. But you have to navigate that. You guys do that social media-wise. You guys do that way better than I do on the show sometimes, because I'll get calls on here and I'll be like, that's not right. And I don't know what to do about that. You guys sometimes handle that way better than I do.
Well, thank you. I think, yeah, and, you know, not just in COVID times, I think we always tell people to be the leader of your own health. To be educated about information and to make decisions. And I think COVID has really shown us that there's so many places people get their information and how they make decisions about their health. And, you know, what we're trying to do as a health department, along with many of the other medical providers, I think is to offer opportunities for people to ask those questions. And we do get calls and emails every day with people asking for more information or wondering if what they heard is accurate.
Now, the big thing that I want to talk to you eventually here is we're about a week and a half away from Oktoberfest, and, you know, some people want to point to Oktoberfest and say, we can't have things like this because it's going to be a super spreader event, and other people are going to say, see, there's the numbers haven't jumped because, and this is all no big deal to have events like this. But before we get to that, I guess we have the National Guard is setting up testing sites. We've confirmed that through December. Is that true? And was that all ever in limbo, that we might just end National Guard testing sites?
Sure. The National Guard is deployed for certain periods of time. And then during each time one of those periods wraps up, there's another question about will it get extended or not. And with COVID, we go through periods of surge and then the cases wane a bit. So it's hard to kind of stay on top of whether there's a need and how long the need will last. But certainly we had a little bit of a lag over summer, which was nice in the middle of summer. But we do have a need for ongoing testing, as we were rising a bit here in late August and early September. And, yeah, the National Guard, we just found out we have Monday testing sites, which has been ongoing from 12 to 6 here at the Human Services Building downtown. And we were just reaffirmed to have Saturdays available at the West Salem Highway Shop from 11 to 3. Into the middle of December.
And how easy is it for somebody to just go get tested?
Easy. You just drive up. Preferably, if you're able to, there's an online registration that you can go to through the health department website or through the county website. There's a link on the main page that you can get to the testing website. Pre-register online. It's fairly easy. And then when you come, you can drive right through. It's a drive-through test. And if you are not able to go online to do the online registration, you can certainly drive up and we'll help you through that.
Now, how big of a hypochondriac do I have to be to go, you know what, I need to go to one of these testing sites or somewhere to get tested? Like, what kind of, can you just go through, maybe you probably have them memorized, but just some of the symptoms that I might feel that, you know, because a lot of people at this point are like, you know, I feel, you can't sneeze in public anymore, Audra. So, I sneezed. Do I need to go get tested?
Well, I think anytime, you know, sometimes people are saying it's allergy season, and this is a normal thing for me at this time to feel this way, congested or stuffy or sore throat. But really, we would like you to consider being more preventative than that because of COVID and what it could do. Being aware that you have COVID is important, even if you don't feel your symptoms are maybe that distressing. But you are, if you have COVID and contracted it, you are possibly exposing other people to the disease. So just being aware that you have it is important to be able to keep people that you care about safe and people that you may work around or live with. So I think, yeah, going to get tested. I wouldn't say anyone's a hypochondriac. We're recommending preventative testing. If you go on a, you know, if you go to an event, even a large event or a travel, many people, when they come back, are just doing a preventative test to just double check that they are feeling okay. And with COVID, you may not have any symptoms and be exposing people because it's in your system. So going to get a test is always a good idea if you have any concerns or have a reason to think that you might have been exposed.
Yeah, that was the question I had with Paula Silla at the health department before Oktoberfest, because I wanted to know, okay, I'm going to go to Oktoberfest. I'm going to be, you know, it might be outside and that's fine, but I might end up at the bars indoors afterwards that night, and it's going to be crowded bars, maskless people, you know, whatever, breathing on each other. And now Oktoberfest is over. I go home, you know, Saturday, Sunday, when you think you might have been exposed to something like that, how many days should you wait before you go get tested, even if you're not feeling anything? It's probably just better if I'm, hey, oh, you know what? I was maskless at a bar with 100 people. How many days after that event would it be a good idea to get tested, Audra?
Yeah, it's always good to wait a couple of days to see if you start to have a need to go. But I would say if you're doing it preventatively, again, wait a couple days. But you could be waiting up to 14 days even for some people to have any symptoms at all, even when they've contracted it. So I think in that range of the 2 weeks, but not to get it in the first day or two necessarily, not to get a test.
Okay, so if I'm at the bar Saturday, 2 a.m. bar time, I shouldn't go get tested until maybe Wednesday, 3 days?
Yeah, I would say a couple of days if you believe that that's a risk. If you were in a bar that was crowded and you had no mask and weren't distanced and vaccinated, for sure, something to consider.
Yeah, because when you say a couple of days, to me that's two, and then I'm thinking, well, is it three? So how many days exactly? Three?
Yeah, we have people sometimes that are doing it a couple times. You know, they'll do one test possibly 3 days after going on a trip, and then maybe they test a week later or 10 days later just to do a confirmatory to double check one more time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Just because you test negative today doesn't mean that it'll continue to be negative. It could turn positive over the course of the 14 days.
Yeah, and okay, so you talked about there was a lag this summer in cases, which is great. But we're at like 51 cases a day. I think that's the latest report from the health department in La Crosse County, 51 cases a day. For the first year, I think, I was doing numbers every day. So I could have told you at that point the average cases per day we've had the last week. And it was never 50. 50 always seemed like, if we had 50 cases a day a year, you know, before the vaccine, that was crazy. But the 51 cases a day is not good.
No. And I think that, you know, this has been a long time period for everybody to keep hearing this on the news, and people worried about the many things that can happen. And I think people wanted a break after we got the ability to be vaccinated earlier in the year. It's hard to hear it in the media all the time, and sometimes we're just toning it out. But certainly 50 cases a day or 40, you know, where we've been the last couple of weeks, it's concerning. And I think more concerning than just the cases is, you know, the hospitalizations that usually come following the case rate rising. Then, you know, shortly after that, we see generally the hospitalizations rising. And, you know, we have concerns about not only what COVID does for an individual currently when they have COVID, as well as afterward with the possibility of having long-term issues, but also the healthcare systems and their ability to manage the number of people that are continually coming in for care and treatment. And we want to make sure that those services are available for things outside of COVID too. So their capacity is important.
We're speaking with Audra Martini. She's the health director for the La Crosse County Health Department. Been in human services here in La Crosse for 18 years. Okay, so when you mentioned hospitalizations, the last two reports on the La Crosse County Health page, so from September 26th to October 2nd, and then October 3rd through 9th, when it says in the Western region, both those weeks has been 50 patients per day with COVID. Can you explain what that means a little bit?
The number of people in the hospital with COVID.
Is that okay? So Monday there's 50 patients in Western region hospitals with COVID. Tuesday there's still 50. The average is 50. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, some people can go. Generally, people are waiting. I mean, they wait until they get fairly sick because, again, they're thinking the symptoms might be something else. But it is important. Again, it can change so quickly. And if there's a concern, it's important to go in. We have seen in August and September, more deaths in our local area here in La Crosse County than we've had since January or February. And that spike is very concerning. And you know, the number of cases is one thing, the number of deaths is another, hospitalizations, and there's just so many things that can happen. So for people to be really aware that, you know, to not be passive and to keep on alert for their risk and, you know, keep encouraging prevention measures. Certainly vaccination is the number one thing we can do to prevent COVID, the masking and distancing, and do your best to have safe activities for everybody in your family.
Where are we at with... I guess I'm getting a text here. Can you ask how many deaths there have been in La Crosse County since January 2020? I guess that's a weird number to grab. But we're at like 100 deaths total, right? Somewhere around there?
Yep, over 100. Yep.
And when you talk about the don't wait, go get tested. First of all, get vaccinated. Then you really don't have to worry about hospitalization, I think, right? We're at like the upper 90% of people that are vaccinated end up not hospitalized or flip-flop. You know, if you're not vaccinated, 90% of those COVID patients end up hospitalized. But the way, you know, we've gone through COVID long enough that we have treatment. So if you catch the symptoms early, get tested, then you can get some of these treatments that'll prevent you from even being hospitalized, right?
Yeah, they're having more treatments for people once they do catch it, especially if you come in early. And are in the early stages of the disease, there's more they can do preventatively with medications and treatments to help you. But I think also just to know, when we have a high case rate, which we are at right now, considered very high for Wisconsin in La Crosse County, there will be breakthrough cases. So even people that are vaccinated have risk, and there are people that are getting it. It doesn't mean the vaccine isn't working. It just means that the case rates are so high, there's going to be that percent of people that do still contract. So even if you're vaccinated, if you feel you've been in a risky situation or you need to check because you have symptoms, I'd still recommend getting tested.
This question comes up every once in a while, Audra. The comparison to deaths with flu versus COVID, is there any comparison there?
It's different. I mean, it's very, very different. So I guess I have to know specifically what kind of comparison, if it's about numbers. You know, there's always going to be, well, last year, for instance, we had a very low flu rate. And that was because we were all wearing masks and were distanced. And that's not a normal way for us to live. We're not saying that we should be doing that every year. However, it does prevent deaths and it prevents illness from a lot of people that can't take that kind of thing in their body. So it's something to consider. And I know this year we're seeing higher influenza-like activity, so there's some concern now that more people are going without masks, that we might have a rebound of a quite significant flu case number this fall. So that's also something to consider, is to get vaccinated for flu as well. It's very important.
Yeah, I think what they want there is, like, if you take a moment in time, like a year's worth of time, how many people died of COVID versus how many people died of flu? You know, they always want to make that comparison, but I don't have that number in front of me, and maybe you don't either.
Yeah, I don't have it right at my fingertips. No.
Okay, Oktoberfest happened about a week and a half ago. The end of Oktoberfest. We're probably we're 2 weeks out from the start of Oktoberfest. Are we going to, are we seeing a jump, a rise in numbers? Can you explain how this works? Because it doesn't look like, from the latest report from the La Crosse County Health Department's Facebook page, we're still about the same as we were the week before. The numbers aren't great, but we're about the same. So we didn't see this large rise from Oktoberfest. Is it too early to tell that stuff?
Well, I think, you know, whether it was one festival or another, we have several festivals that occur and many other events. I think the events in general, what we're seeing the cases when we ask individuals where they're where they think they may have contracted COVID, oftentimes it is from, you know, weddings, outdoor, even concerts, larger gatherings where people are eating in restaurants, things like that. So I think it's just important to kind of be aware of those large events. And yeah, about 2 weeks out, we would watch for a possible rise in case rate. We've seen some cases directly attributed to Oktoberfest where people told us that that's where they may think they have gotten it. And again, overall, we do know that people are maybe not getting tested as often as again, we've been doing this a long time. So we'll be watching not only just the case rate in relation to different events going on, but also the hospitalization rate that follows after the case rates.
Yeah,
it usually takes a little longer.
Yeah, because that the data is going to start coming in now, 2 weeks out from the beginning of Oktoberfest. We're going to start seeing that data now. And when you talk about getting tested maybe 10 days after you were out and about at some place where, you know, large crowds, no masks, this would probably be a good time to start getting tested from the midst of Oktoberfest, right?
Yeah, if you were somebody that wanted to just double check and make sure, even if you were asymptomatic, if you were out there, it's not a bad idea to just have a preventative check.
All right. Audra Mattini, thank you so much for joining us. I guess if you see how Oktoberfest is starting to affect you know, the numbers, whether good or bad, I appreciate you letting us know.
Sure.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, bye. All right. We got to take a break. Scott's comment, the news coming up, and then I'm going to talk to Tom Kamenick, the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. He's the attorney for the Badger Project in the lawsuit against the La Crosse Police Department. A lot of departments here. And, in terms of an open records request. So we can talk about open records when we come back. All right, welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM. 608-785-7914 is the text line if you want to text. You got questions about this as we get into a conversation here with Tom Kamenick. He's the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. How long have you been doing this project, Tom?
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. And the Transparency Project has been going strong for 2 years now.
2 years. And can you just describe what that is? And then we'll get into the La Crosse Police Department situation.
Yeah, I'm the only lawyer in the state that I'm aware of, at least, that focuses exclusively on open records and open meetings laws. So I provide low and sometimes no cost representation to people trying to get records or trying to improve transparency at the state and local levels.
All right, so you think you might be the only lawyer. This sounds like a niche where I can make some money here. I just got to get into the game. Or is this but you say you're providing this at low or no cost. What gives?
So the records law and the meetings law both have what are called fee-shifting provisions. So if you file a lawsuit and you win, the other side is supposed to pay your attorney's fees. So I do a lot of my work on a contingency basis where I take either just a little bit up front from my clients to kind of cover some out-of-pocket expenses, first hour or two of work maybe, and then the rest is a contingency. So, you know, just like your, you know, no fee unless we win personal injury lawyers, I do work on a kind of similar basis.
All right, and you're dealing with open records. So do you, when somebody brings you a case, you know, on your website, and I should have had it in front of me. You can yell it out here in a sec. On your website, it says you're going to, it's a free consultation, essentially. And when you do that consultation, you'll be like, at that point, you'll be like, yeah, you don't really have a case here. You're not going to win this. Do you kind of know going in sometimes?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you if I think the custodian is wrong and you've got a case, or sometimes I'll tell people that send me emails or give me a phone call, hey, you know, they're right. They get to withhold this information, or they can charge you these fees that they're trying to charge you.
All right. And before I'm coming up with all these questions that before I get into the La Crosse Police Department thing, is there just like one of the bigger cases that you handled in the state? Is there like a big body cam thing or just something with Governor Evers that you handled that you had to go through with open records?
Yeah. I handled one of my bigger cases was against Governor Evers. The Fox 6 News out of Milwaukee had requested, just wanted a week of his emails. You know, no particular search terms, just wanted to see, hey, who are you talking to and what are you talking to them about? And the Evers team responded and said, no, we're not going to turn that over. We think that's too vague, too broad of a request. We filed a lawsuit, and the courts ruled in our favor and said, no, you do not need to provide search terms if you want to see emails. A restriction on the time frame is good enough.
That sounds like kind of a, I don't know, is that hard for an office to do then? Is they send all the, you just go to the sent items and forward all the emails to Fox News 6, right?
Yeah, that's the ironic thing, is it's actually easier for them to search for all emails than it is to put in particular search terms and then go through everything. You know, we just wanted basically a big dump. We would look the correspondence of Governor Evers, you know, the files, just like our founding fathers, right? You have the letters of George Washington and the letters of Alexander Hamilton. But we wanted the emails of Governor Evers.
Yeah. And you've been doing this 2 years. I would say, you know, not maybe not George Washington days, but pre-email days, this probably was a lot harder to do. I want the open records of Governor Evers' letters to, you know, everybody. Well, I don't even know. How would open records have worked before emails?
It really depended on how they organized their files. You know, did they keep physical copies of these things, or were these electronic files on a computer kept in different folders on the centralized servers? You know, things were a little more difficult. But if you know what email program or email server a public officer is using, they can just go and, you know, by and large, with almost all email servers these days, you can download those very quickly.
With Fox News 6 asking Governor Evers for all his sent items for an entire week, does it have to be a news organization, or can some crazy guy that really doesn't like Governor Evers living in his basement want to request that, and then because he wants to read all the emails Governor Evers is sending out as well?
Hey, that's the great thing about the public records law, is it just any member of the public can make this request. You can be a media organization. You can be a nonprofit organization. You can just be one person who's curious and wants to check this out. That's up to you. It doesn't really matter as far as the records law is concerned.
We're speaking with Tom Kamenek. He's the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. Tom, if I want to do that, you know, I think if you ask Evers for all his sent items in a week, that's probably doesn't cost a lot of money. In the past, I've opened records requested some, and this is before we just were sending videos. I think it was a little harder to send big image or video files. You know, I would get charged a little bit, not a lot, from like the police department for a body cam video. But, you know, there is a point here where this is probably kind of costly for governments and just, you know, bodies like that. Can you talk about that a little bit, just the cost of maintaining open records and getting people this information?
Yeah, first of all, the law itself, the open records law, the statutes say that responding to record requests and providing information to the public is a basic function of government. It's fundamental to what they do. It's a routine part of their job duties. So, yes, it definitely costs money to maintain records, and it costs money to produce them. But that's just part of the whole spiel. That's part of being a transparent and democratic society, that we get to know what our representatives and our elected officials and our just the everyday employees that we our tax money pays for, we get to know what they're doing. And there are provisions where the record custodians can charge requesters. So if it costs the custodian money to make photocopies, because, you know, paper costs money and ink costs money and running printers cost some money too, they can pass that on to the requesters.
And then, you know, Governor, we're picking on Evers a little bit, not really, but kind of. Governor Evers did put something in his budget to make it more affordable for maybe just the small news organizations or just that guy in the basement to get some open records. Can you talk about that? But Republicans stripped it out of the budget. I don't understand. Why would this get stripped out of the budget? Can you explain, essentially, you know, if the cost of getting an open records was $50 or more, I would have to pay for that. But Evers tried to make that bump that up to $100.
Yeah, requesters get a pass kind of on the first $50 of at least for location fees. They can still charge for actual copy fees, but one of the other fees they can charge is for the time they spend going and looking for your records in response to your record request. And the law currently says if that cost is under $50, which is basically just time times wage, you know, what's the salary or the hourly wage equivalent to the person doing the looking. And if that's under $50, they couldn't charge it to you. But it's been that way since 1981. And if you go to an inflation calculator, that's about $150 these days. And Evers proposed that be increased to $100. And the Republicans did take it out when they passed their version of the budget. And they did not issue any any statements as to why. So that's purely in the realm of speculation.
And you'd probably like to see that jump down to or jump up to $100 as well, right? Based on what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, location fees are some of the most abused fees we see from record custodians, because we will often get requests that custodians claim will cost hundreds, sometimes even thousands of dollars to perform. And a lot of the times we know that's completely bogus, especially when you're requesting electronic records. But it's often a tactic used by some custodians to discourage people from making requests by putting it out of what they can afford.
Now, when you say custodians, are these people also like cleaning government buildings?
No, custodian is a legal term for the people that are in charge of the records. So if every elected official is the custodian of their own records, from Governor Evers himself down to your local elected board member. But when you talk about a government entity like a school district or a state department or a city itself, each of those entities has to have a designated custodian, and that's the person responsible for fulfilling record requests.
Now, we're speaking with Tom Kamenick, the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. You're the attorney for Peter Cameron, the editor of the Badger Project, whatever you want to call him, the editor-in-chief, there we go, of the Badger Project. They're suing, or you're also, I guess I could say you're suing the La Crosse Police Department for an open records denial. The La Crosse Police Department has denied the Badger Project an open records. Can you just kind of explain what's going on?
Yeah, so just as a background there's a police officer, or at least a former police officer, who resigned in the middle of an investigation. So the investigation was not completed, and the guy quits, winds up at a different police department for a couple years before he resigns from there, too. So Peter Cameron is looking into this. I wonder what they were accused of doing. What did the investigation find? What did they look at? We don't know. So he made a record request for those internal investigation files. Well, he gets a flat-out denial and says, we're not going to turn these over. And the only reason they cite is they say internal disciplinary. Now, there isn't an exemption for, or at least a blanket exemption for internal investigations. And if you look at the history of cases in Wisconsin, case after case says you can't just say no when investigation and internal discipline files are requested. You may be able to redact some information, like if you have some whistleblowers, the names of victims or witnesses. Those kind of things can be blacked out or redacted, removed from files, but they're not supposed to just blanket deny a request. And so we filed a lawsuit saying that this denial is invalid and illegal, and we want the court to order the La Crosse Police Department to turn over these records.
All right, so what's the timeline on something like this going? So are we going to go to court, or do you think the police department might give in here?
Well, there was actually a case released just earlier this week coming to this exact same conclusion again. It was a disciplinary file for a Milwaukee County sheriff officer, and the Court of Appeals here in Wisconsin said, yeah, you can't withhold the whole thing. You have to redact some information maybe, but you've got to turn them over. So as soon as the La Crosse Police Department files an answer in the case, and I know who their attorney is, I'll be talking with that attorney and saying, look, here's the cases that say we're right. Can we resolve this? Can you turn over the records now? But if they want to fight, then it'll drag out for, it's hard to tell exactly how quickly cases move. It could be 3 months, could be 9 months, but before we get a court ruling on the issue.
All right. And do you have experience in this realm where you could, can you put a cost on, you know, what it would cost? I don't know what it would cost you, what it would cost the La Crosse Police Department to go to battle in court over this thing.
So police department would pay for their own attorney, of course. It's highly likely, I don't know this for certain, but very typically this is covered by insurance policies for municipalities when lawsuits like this are filed. But if they wind up losing the case, they've got to pay Peter's attorney's fees too. So that's my fees, my hourly rate times the number of hours that I worked on the case. So it's in their interest to settle quickly and turn over the records. If they do that, they'll keep the cost down on this case too. It's hard to say exactly, but typically if a case is resolved right away, it's just a couple thousand dollars. But if the case goes to a full hearing and full discovery and there needs to be witnesses examined, that case can cost $20,000 or more.
Do you have any? Can you make predictions on what you think might happen?
I think it's likely that when the attorneys get involved, they will tell the La Crosse Police Department that they that they've got it wrong and they need to turn over these records.
Now, is that you just saying that because you're on that side of the case?
I've had a lot of cases where that's happened, where we filed the case and they changed their mind fairly quickly and turned over the records. Some of them go long on to trial and sometimes even appeals, but a fair number of them get the lawsuit gets resolved fairly quickly.
We're speaking with Tom Kamenick. He's the president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. You said you might be the only lawyer doing this stuff. Well, how do you get into this? I mean, is this just like a passion for you and you really like to dig into open records, or was it, like I said, a niche where nobody is doing this thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting field to be in. I love it. It's a lot of fun. I get to sue bureaucrats for a living. You know, it's kind of a dream job. There are a few other attorneys that do some of this work, but I'm the only one I'm aware of who focuses exclusively on it. And so I actually got my start doing this for a public interest law firm called Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. When I worked there, this was my specialty, was records and meetings law issues, but that wasn't the only thing I did there. So I decided I wanted to focus exclusively on that, so I broke off.
This doesn't sound like a fun job, because maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but you're trying to get these open records sent to your clients. But I guess you don't have to read all the open records, right? Or you're just trying to get them. So because it would sound boring for me to try to read a week's worth of Governor Tony Evers' emails, but you're not reading the emails. You're just trying to get them.
I'm getting them so my clients can read them. That's what they're interested in. Right. And that kind of gets into a little bit of what I love about this job, is that I don't care who my clients are too much and who they're trying to get records from, if it's a Republican or a Democrat or something in between, or what kind of records they want. I currently have cases going after records about critical race theory in schools, and I have records requests of lawsuits that I'm filing for police disciplinary records. And so I'm all over the place, and I don't pick and choose based on the politics of what's going on with these requests.
Now, how long have you been doing this kind of work? I know Wisconsin Transparency Project, 2 years, but how long have you been doing this?
10 years. Once I came out of law school, I clerked at the Wisconsin Supreme Court for a year, and I actually had a records law case there. And when I started working at Will, that was 2011, and one of our first cases was a meetings law case where the Milwaukee County Board failed to provide sufficient notice ahead of time that it was going to be doing its redistricting, voting on its redistricting in a particular meeting.
Oh boy, redistricting. I don't even want to get into it. But
it's that time of decade again, isn't
right?
it?
Yeah. In the last 10 years, I have one thing, and like I'm thinking about like body cams. This is becoming a thing that's more prevalent across the nation, I would guess. And is that a thing that's becoming, you're seeing a lot more of, or is there something else just in your field of work that you've seen a lot of, you know, this is getting denied, or I have to go to court over this thing?
I have seen a real uptick in denials for these kind of internal investigation files. Like, so one of our cases right now is on behalf of a large number of media outlets that sought records about a state representative who was found to have sexually harassed a female staffer. Stausch Krasinski was his name. And when everybody made record requests for like the complaint that was filed and the reports that were filed, the assembly said, no, we're not turning those over. Here's a very brief summary about it, and that's it. We're not doing anything else. And we filed a lawsuit, and Dane County Circuit Court ruled that the assembly had to turn over the actual underlying complaint and other documents with some redactions to protect the victim's identity and some witnesses who were interviewed. But the assembly has appealed that. So now we're fighting that in the Court of Appeals.
And, you know, I keep jumping to body cams. I think it was going through the legislature, just the idea of we can't just release body cams flat out. Do you get into that? Like when we should and shouldn't release body cam video based on what else is in the video?
Yeah, so there was new legislation just a couple years ago, or within the last couple of years, rather, on this issue. But even before that legislation, it was clear that body cams were records that had to be reviewed and turned over. But there's more clear guidelines from the state now with this new legislation. And kind of the key here is that if there is video of a private place or a place where a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, that's kind of borrowing from some constitutional law there, like the inside of your home, very often that will be either withheld completely or redacted. So you'll see some blurring of faces, some editing out of people, perhaps, you know, providing their names or their social security numbers. Obviously, we don't want that turned over. Records requests for body cams should be fulfilled.
We're going through, it's kind of a weird story, and this isn't like a big caper here, but somebody destroyed an odd looking piece of art here in La Crosse, and there should be video of it, because it was outside the police station. This piece of art, it's called Hatch Baby, if you want to Google that later, Tom. But we haven't seen video from the police department. I requested it, you know, right after the fact, but it's an ongoing investigation. That's what I get a lot of the times. We can't release these records because of the ongoing investigation. So I can't see who destroyed the blue baby, essentially, because they're still investigating. Do you see that a lot?
That is one of the most misused exemptions I've found in the records law. I get this constantly. Oh, it's an ongoing investigation. There is no blanket exemption for ongoing investigations, with one small caveat that if there's an internal investigation of an employee, that's exempt until it's finished. But for crime investigations, no, there's no exemption for that. Now, there is something called the balancing test, which is kind of weighing competing interests. And there are some circumstances where if releasing records would interfere with an investigation, they can withhold them. So, you know, it would tip off a suspect that doesn't know we're looking for them yet, or it would reveal some secret crime investigation techniques that they don't want potential criminal defendants to know about. Things like that they can withhold, but they're supposed to be going through that on a document-by-document, record-by-record basis and determining whether or not releasing it would actually interfere with the investigation. And
I don't see
how releasing the video of something that happened out in public, right? This was outdoors.
Yeah, well, the only way the person wouldn't have known maybe that they destroyed the Hatch Baby and the police are looking for him is because they were so blackout drunk that they don't remember doing it. All right, sounds like I should go bug the police about that video and then send Tom the email. Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for joining us, man.
Yeah, you bet. And anybody who wants to find me, take a look at our website. It's wiopenrecords.com.
All right, thanks. All right, one more break. All right, that's all the time I have for today. Appreciate Tom Kamenik coming on and Audra Martini coming on and talking about COVID-19. Sounds like I might have to follow up on this hatched baby vandalism video. UW La Crosse political science professor Dr. Anthony Chergosky on Friday. Thanks for listening.